Radio Prague News. Israel has thanked the Czech Republic for its support over the status of Jerusalem. Czechs' trust in the EU has seen a slight increase. And the Czech Republic have reached the quarterfinals of the Ice Hockey World Championships. Israeli President Reuven Rivlin has thanked the Czech Republic for its firm stand regarding the status of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. The Czech Republic was one of three countries which last week blocked a joint declaration by the European Union criticizing the United States for transferring its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. President Rivlin also expressed appreciation of President Zeman's view that the Czech Republic should follow the U.S. example. The Czech president received an invitation to visit Israel, which the Israeli head of state said would further strengthen the strong ties between the two countries. In a recent telegram of congratulations on Israel's Independence Day, Prime Minister Andrei Babiš reaffirmed the Czech Republic's intention to open an honorary consulate in Jerusalem by the end of May. Czech's trust in the European Union has increased to 44%, up by 5% as compared to last year, according to the results of a poll undertaken by the CVVM agency. 48% of respondents said that the measure of integration within the EU should best remain as it is, and 73% said they're against the Czech Republic adopting the euro. The negative public stand against euro adoption has been evident since 2010. In the years between 2006 and 2009, the number of supporters and opponents was more or less balanced. The ANO party will not reveal its list of candidates for ministers in the next coalition government, ANO leader and Prime Minister Andrei Babiš said on Monday. He was responding to calls from the Social Democrats for the list to be unveiled ahead of the Social Democratic Party's referendum on whether the party should enter into a coalition government with ANO. ANO will also need to address a recently voiced condition for tolerance from the Communist Party, which wants the parties of the future government to commit not to increase the country's presence in foreign missions. Art historians from the Academy of Sciences have appealed to Prague councillors not to approve the demolition of Libeň Bridge dating back to 1928. City councillors are divided on the matter and are due to vote on it on Thursday. Art historians have sent the City Council an open letter asking councillors not to consider just the economic aspects of the decision, but to take into account the cultural legacy which is at stake. The bridge has been badly neglected, and some councillors argue that pulling it down and building a new bridge would be less costly than saving the old one. And the Czech Republic has reached the quarterfinals of the Ice Hockey World Championships. Coach Josef Jandáč's team demolished France 6-0 and had their qualification secured when Sweden later beat Switzerland. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday is expected to bring rain and a drop in day temperatures to between 13 and 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, the communists throw a political bombshell into attempts to form a new government. The head of the state-owned forestry company has got the chop over bark beetle infestation in Czech forests. And later on in the program, we meet Mary Hockaday, who is director of English programming at the BBC World Service, but in the early 1990s was the station's Young Prague correspondent. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Negotiations over forming a minority Czech government between the dominant ANO party and the Social Democrats have been wrapped up regarding the outstanding policy issues. But the Czech communists, whose support is crucial for a new government, have dropped what amounts to a bombshell, warning that they will not line up with a minority government if a pledge to boost Czech foreign missions is not dropped. Chris Johnston has more.
The leader of the Communist Party of Bohemia and Moravia, Vojtěch Filip, issued his warning at the weekend. Party leaders are angered at the pledge in the draft ANO and Social Democrat coalition agreement to boost Czech participation in foreign missions in Afghanistan and Iraq. They're also looking askance at the possibility that the Czech army might commit itself to take part in a NATO rapid reaction force for the Baltic states. Bluntly put, Philip warned, if these commitments remain, then a future ANO-led coalition government cannot count on the 15 members of the 200-strong lower house voting for key legislation. This is how Communist Member of Parliament Stanislav Grospič described the party's stand to Czech radio and said it had already flagged up the foreign missions issue in talks with ANO.
Takovýto požadavek avizovali. Avizovali jsme i veřejnosti, že na něm stále není určitá shoda.
We gave notice of this demand. We also said publicly that there were certain differences on the issue. We think that the current commitments of the Czech Republic should be respected, but we have a real problem with the Czech army mission in the Baltics. We do not think that the government should widen or deepen its commitments regarding these things. The status should remain as it is, or rather these things should be wound down.
And the communists are reported to have problems with other reforms as well, such as moves to reform the current pension system and separate financing from the overall state budget. And they've hinted that they want their share of posts on the boards of state companies and a say on ministers in the new cabinet. ANO's deputy chairman, Richard Brabec, said he was surprised by the bluntness of the communist demand on foreign missions, but the party's policy stance was already broadly known. But the demand has opened up fresh debate within the Social Democrat Party about whether it's just the ANO party of Prime Minister Andrej Babiš that should be leading talks to make sure the communists are fully on board supporting the government, or whether they should be involved as well. Haunted in part by a past party resolution never to do a deal with the communists, some Social Democrat Party leaders say it's solely an ANO issue and they should not sign up to anything. Others warn that any ANO commitments to the communists will clearly impact the whole coalition government. Those divisions come against the backdrop of the party's pending drawn-out referendum on the final coalition deal with ANO, which is due to start in the week and conclude mid-June. Any impression that the communists are writing some of the script for the future coalition government is unlikely to bolster support for the ANO coalition.
Chris Johnston with that report. The head of the state-owned forestry company Lesy České republiky, Daniel Sorád, has been sacked by the Minister of Agriculture in resignation, Jiří Mílek. The reason? The continuing calamitous impact of bark beetle infestation in state forests and the former boss's apparent inability to do something about it. Jan Wellinger has the details.
Although there are hundreds of timber producers in the Czech Republic, state-owned Lesy Čura is the biggest. In recent years, the company took a hit, with lumber production affected by the serious problem of bark beetle infestation. In 2016, some 70% of trees felled were so-called calamity timber, trees where there was no option but to fell due to damage, as opposed to quality timber, which would yield better prices. And the crisis continued. Last year, the state forestry firm's profits shrank by almost a third as the bark beetle crisis worsened and the glut of timber worsened. Lesy Čura is usually a significant contributor to the state coffers, but those payments have been slipping for several years now. The bark beetle crisis is now reckoned to be the most severe in recent Czech history, meaning there's no likelihood of a rapid upturn in the company's fortunes. Announcing the sacking of Sorád, Minister Mílek called the state of Czech forests critical and said that too little had been done to prevent the spread of bark beetle infestation in Moravia and that a far more proactive approach was what had been missing. He also went to pains to underline the decision to remove Mr. Sorád, who was appointed by his predecessor Milan Jurečka in the former Social Democrat-led government, was in no way political. In his defense, the sacked head of Lesy Čura said the firm had been hit by one bad wave after another of the infestation during repeated heat waves. Minister Mílek said the problem had been an ineffective reaction to developments from the former head, who had stayed the course rather than adapt to the infestation calamity on his hands. Agriculture Minister Jiří Mílek.
To, že nám v loňském roce spadla na podzim kalamita.
We had a calamity last autumn, but we pressed forward according to out-of-date amendments. More and more green trees were stereotypically felled, and then we had another calamity in March. All the wood I just spoke of was to have been processed by the end of March and wasn't, and unfortunately in some places will serve as a breeding ground for more and more bark beetles.
V březnu nám přišla další kalamita. Veškeré to dřevo, o kterém jsem teďka mluvil, mělo být zpracováno.
The agriculture minister intends to name Ludvík Říčář, who heads Lesičura's Liberec branch, as crisis manager. The fired head of Lesičura held the post since April 2014. In the past, he worked also in IKEA industry. He said he had accepted the decision, saying he never claimed to be, quote, the best candidate for the job in the world.
Jan Wellinger with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. The BBC World Service is by some distance the world's largest international radio station. One-time Czech correspondent Mary Hockaday is today one of the broadcaster's top bosses, and she is Ian Willoughby's guest in this edition of One on One.
As controller of the BBC World Service English, Mary Hockaday is one of the most senior executives at the globe's biggest radio station. When she was in Prague last week for a recording of the debate show World Questions, I asked Hockaday about various aspects of the World Service's role and today's media landscape. But the conversation began with her years here in the Czech capital in the early 1990s, when she was the BBC's correspondent in the city.
I was young, I was restless, I'd been here before, and I was really taken with Prague, the city, and the people I met. So when the Berlin Wall came down and all the changes, it just seemed to me an extraordinary opportunity as a journalist to come and report on what was going on. So I reported for the BBC, but also for the independent newspaper, and had a really fascinating time. It was an incredible atmosphere then, you know, a time of great change, of great hope. And I've been thinking back, actually, as I've been here on this visit, thinking back about, you know, what were the big stories? What was I reporting on? I remember a sequence of visits from George Bush, the Pope, and the Rolling Stones, and I think you can maybe be able to guess which got the biggest audience. But then the serious stories, there was a lot about forging democracy, looking to Europe, restitution, lustrazione, privatisation. You know, these were some of the big issues of the time. And then later, towards the end of my time here, the debate about Czechoslovakia and in the end, the Velvet Separation, the Velvet Divorce.
And what kind of people did you get to meet here? For example, did you ever interview Havel?
I did. I certainly did, yes, a couple of times. And, you know, quite frequently, usually Dinsbier, the foreign minister, but also Václav Klaus. I mean, a full range of the political spectrum. I was always interested, too, in talking to ordinary Czechs about their life, their history, the amazing stories and difficult times people had been through, but then the sense of change and opportunity and also, you know, people in business and the arts and so on, but certainly plenty of the politicians.
People often talk about the 90s with great nostalgia as a super exciting time where anything went. What are your strongest memories, apart from the working side of being here, of your life in Prague?
I had great friends, actually. I made great friends. And, you know, it was a feature still that many people had a passion for the countryside and a passion to leave Prague and get out of Prague at the weekends and explore, you know, the woods and the hills and the mountains. And I remember being very struck by the system of paths and the markings of paths, because it seemed to be vastly superior to what we had in Britain, where, you know, you had to have a map and a compass half the time. I think the most challenging thing I did, a friend took me cross-country skiing. And I have to say, that's the only skiing I've ever done in my life. And my arms felt that they were going to fall off, but it was fun.
I presume it was when you were here that you began researching your book about Milena Jesenská, who I guess is best known as being Kafka's romantic partner. Mm. What was it that drew you to her story?
Yes, that was really interesting. There was a small exhibition about her. You know, it was a time when her story, like many stories, were beginning to be told again. And there was a small exhibition about her, and I actually was particularly interested in her as a journalist. I mean, obviously the relationship with Kafka, you know, people knew about, but it seemed to me there was more to her than that. And I first proposed to a publisher that I might simply do a sort of anthology of her writing as a way of understanding Czechoslovakia between the wars and history of that time. But the publisher had said, no, you must tell the whole story, you must do a biography. So with some trepidation, I set out and did that. And it was an absolute privilege, actually, to do the research. I spent a long time in the newspaper library, looking at all the old papers, but also to talk to people who had some link with her, who were very generous in sharing their thoughts and memories. She was a remarkable woman, and her story in and of itself as a you know, woman of her time is extraordinary. But her writing is a window on Czechoslovakia and Central Europe at that time, that history between the wars. And she, of course, tragically was arrested in the end by the Germans and ended up in Ravensbrück concentration camp, where she died. So her story does, you know, reveal a great deal about those times.
If we could move to the present. You're now the controller of BBC World Service English. Controller sounds like a very powerful job. What exactly do you do?
Well, it's a slightly old-fashioned term in a way, isn't it? I mean, in essence, I'm director of BBC World Service English, which means the radio service, but also the digital content.
I was reading that since you took the post of controller in 2014, the World Service has extended its reach from 40 million people a week to almost double that number. Where is the World Service finding new listeners or a new audience?
It's really interesting. And I think it gives the lie to anybody who says that, you know, radio or audio as a medium is sort of dying. I mean, it really isn't. I think there is a real resurgence because it's such, you know, here we are talking, it's so simple. It's a very simple medium and you can convey so much information, but also connection between people. And then digital platforms and podcasting and you know, new ways of offering audio to audiences, I think, is really giving it a new lease of life. And we find we have growing audiences everywhere, actually. So that can be, you know, North America and Europe, but also in parts of Africa and South Asia as well. You know, really, we have audience, we have some audience everywhere. And we've worked very hard to make sure that people can find us and find a way to listen to what we do. And I think, you know, the world, as we know, is a busy place. There's plenty of news going on. It's a very noisy place. I think actually people often have an appetite to turn to a source that they do know they can trust. And I think all of that means that actually what we offer people is really valued and they seek us out.
When I first came to Prague, I was totally reliant on the World Service. I had it on all day, every day, pretty much. Now I still listen a lot. Sometimes I think that if you're outside the UK, you can really see the value of the World Service. But is it sometimes fully understood within the UK, the reach that it has and what it actually achieves?
It's an interesting question. You're right that for some people in Britain, the thing that matters most to them, of course, are the BBC services for British audiences and domestic audiences. But many people do know about BBC World Service. And indeed, actually, you know, a good number listen. We have a good audience in the United Kingdom. And occasionally the BBC, you know, does surveys of people and their attitudes to the BBC. And actually what you do find is a real pride in Britain in the BBC World Service, because I think people do recognise that, you know, Britain has a very sort of distinctive media tradition in the BBC of a kind of independent public service broadcaster. And, you know, they're proud to think that that's something we offer to the world.
The BBC World Service is often spoken about as a kind of tool of the UK's soft power abroad. How consciously is the World Service part of what you might call Brand UK? And does that influence your programming?
So we are independent, and that's an incredibly important and fundamental thing to say and understand. We are funded through the licence fee, which is in essence a public funding, with some additional public funding that comes via the Foreign Office, but still has to be approved by Parliament. So it's a very transparent and publicly funded organisation, not commercially funded, not state funded. I guess, in a way, we are lucky to operate in a country where the public, as we've discussed, and successive governments of whichever political party believe in the British tradition of independent, impartial news from the BBC. And so it always has that support. And if in the end that means we, I guess, represent or express a particular British value, well, you know, so be it, and that's to the good.
Would you be more likely, for instance, to cover, I don't know, a royal wedding because you think people around the world associate that with England or with the UK?
Well, we will be covering the royal wedding because we know that people are interested. You know, not everybody, some people, of course, are not, but, you know, many people are, and, you know, we know there'll be a big audience. And it's an interesting wedding. I mean, it does have news value, this wedding. You know, the arrival of Meghan Markle into the British royal family is quite a moment. So we will be covering it. But I mean, that's because we recognise the news value and the audience interest.
And how much is the World Service facing relatively new rivals in the form of Russia Today and other broadcasters who are putting a lot of investment into extending their reach around the world.
Mm. You're right, the landscape has changed in this way, and there are many more global news services. And that's not to mention the huge proliferation of news and sometimes what people claim is news, but perhaps isn't on the internet. We obviously note the Chinese investment, the Russian investment and so on. But, you know, in the end, we also know that they do not have the same traditions or charters or embedded values of independence that we do. And we also know, and we're proud of it, that when you do opinion surveys, whether in Britain or indeed globally, the BBC is, if not the, usually one of the most trusted news sources. We don't take that for granted. We work very hard to earn and keep that respect based on our journalistic values, our commitment to accuracy and impartiality, and our transparency and our regulation.
I presume those broadcasters also don't have the great international network of reporters that the BBC World Service has. From your perspective, how much has the work of a reporter on the ground changed from your days here in Prague?
Now, I remember when I came here, I had a little car in London and I sold it to buy a laptop. So, you know, that was the sort of trade, the trade you did, because laptops were very precious things. But, you know, they were there. And I remember when I was out here being taught this very strange thing, which was how to file something over the internet and that funny little whirring noise that the modem used to make. And I mean, I didn't have a mobile phone. And of course, that's massively changed. And it makes the job of a journalist in some ways much, much easier. I think journalists can be incredibly mobile now. You can not just write and record, but of course, you can film now on an iPhone. You can edit on an iPhone. You can send it back on an iPhone or, you know, via satellite. So very instantaneous, very creative. And it's wonderful to be able to have that immediacy and presence. We also know it drives a kind of relentless pace of journalism, and audiences expect that. And one of the things that we strive for is to make sure that even while we are being, you know, fleet of foot and quick in our reporting, that we also are making sure we take the time to understand, to analyse, and take time as well to write or produce longer broadcasts where you can add the context to the immediacy.
My final question is, you're in Prague at the moment recording an edition of World Questions at the Arca Theatre. What is the value for the World Service of events like that?
We go every month to a city somewhere in the world and we mount a really, I think, a powerful and important format. We have a BBC presenter. We invite a panel of politicians and public figures, so not all politicians, but who represent some of the thinking and political opinion in a particular place, for a live event, which we record. And the key is we have an audience. And the questions for the panel come from the audience, and they don't know, the panel doesn't know what they're going to be beforehand. So it's a way of really taking the temperature in a place. And actually, we find that you can be somewhere, and in a way, some of the issues can feel quite local, but they can still resonate, because some of the big issues of our time, like, you know, democracy or freedom of the press, or even, you know, how to make sure the rubbish is clean from the streets, or, you know, how to kind of do recycling better, or corruption, or these are issues which have come up anywhere and everywhere. So even if something is quite local, it can really resonate in a global way. And we find in many, many places, this particular format does not actually exist in the homegrown media. And so we are creating a platform for a particular kind of political encounter and political debate, which we find has value and real interest.
One-time Czech BBC correspondent Mary Hockaday was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. And now it's time for another episode of our Hit of the Century series, in which we are now in the year 2008.
Hit of the Century.
Lucie Vondráčková's song Thin Ice was the hit of 2008. It was a family project. The music was composed by Lucie's father, the lyrics by her mother, Hanna Sorošová. After graduating from secondary school, Lucia's father, Jiří Vondráček, went on to study acting at the faculty of the Academy of Performing Arts in Prague. He later continued his studies at the Folk Conservatory, where he graduated in 1975 with a degree in composition and conducting. Hanna Sorošová studied at the Faculty of Arts at Charles University and then dramaturgy at DAMU. She wrote the lyrics to more than 400 popular songs for a number of Czech singers, including the popular Karel Gott. Lucie Vondráčková herself is the niece of the famous Czech pop star Helena Vondráčková. So, here it is now, Thin Ice, sung by Lucie Vondráčková.
And that was another song in our series Hit of the Century, which brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.